I'm just turning on the recorder. I realized I've talked for 42 minutes about Get Shorty, and I forgot to press record. Ain't that a kick in the pants, ladies and gentlemen? I'm sitting here at my recording deck, talking along. Every so often I glance over at the levels as I do, and I'm thinking to myself, is that recording light supposed to be green or red? If I can even remember which color it's supposed to be. It's green the whole time that I'm talking for 41 minutes. Brilliantly, I might add, about Get Shorty, the film I'm going to discuss with you today. And only as I'm just winding down this point about how great Travolta and Delroy Lindo are in a crucial scene, and how great the adaptation of Elmore Leonard's book, Get Shorty, Scott Frank, put on screen here with the director Barry Sonnenfeld, until I go, you know what? It's supposed to be red. If it's recording, it's red, right? Red light. I mean, how many films have featured any kind of a recording studio or a television booth or voiceover, and we see the red recording sign? Does idiot me, 183 episodes into this podcast, remember that the recording light is supposed to be red and not green? No. Well, I guess I had a great dry run, and now you'll either get a retread, or I'll even sound more informed than I actually did when I went through it for the first time. Okay. So yes, Get Shorty. This is a film that it's hard not to look at now and mourn, as people do, that Hollywood doesn't make them like this anymore. I'm not sure that that's entirely true, because there are smaller films that are made. But this era in the mid-90s, when you could have a film from a major studio and a production company run by Danny DeVito and his associates in Jersey Films, that has a handful of brilliant actors. By the way, let me just stop down. The maitre d' at the restaurant where Travolta loses his coat is played by...
You took length like the one Pacino wore in Serpico? Because if you don't, you owe me $379.
Well, maybe you didn't see the sign.
But I didn't come to sunny Florida to freeze my ass off. You got that? So you either find my coat or you give me the $379 that my ex-wife paid for it at Alexander's.
Reno...
The guy who said Reno, he's in every Rockford Files and Columbo episode, usually playing a similar character.
No, he didn't take it. He borrowed it. Because see, somebody took his coat. So Mr. Barboni tried this other coat, and it fit him pretty good.
That was my coat.
He was wearing it to go home, but he's not going to keep it.
No. My car keys are in that coat.
Mr. Barboni is a good customer. You know, he works for Jimmy Cab.
I know who he works for. Where's your phone?
You know, Travolta is so in command just all throughout this picture. It's incredible to think that this is really only the second or third film that he made. It's the first or second film he made after his comeback in Pulp Fiction. This is like only a year after Pulp Fiction. And it's as if he is absolutely at the height of his movie starness, as opposed to someone who's only recently been returned to those heights. The soundtrack here works so in concert with Travolta's movement in so many scenes. It's one of the great Scream soundtracks. It's a combination of original music made by John Lurie, downtown New York denizen of the 70s and 80s, proprietor of the Lounge Lizards, and also accompanying tracks that are so well chosen throughout the history of music from a number of different decades, but it sounds as if they could all be of a similar composition, that it was all scored just for this film. So yes, it's hard to watch a film like this And as you know, I appreciate other Elmore Leonard adaptations like Jackie Brown, like Soderbergh's Out of Sight. You know, these are three filmmakers, Barry Sonnenfeld, who directed this, three filmmakers who really appreciate and get how to put the Elmore Leonard cinematic universe on screen. And it's through a fealty to the dialogue in the book, as Scott Frank himself noticed in some of the making of materials that I've read about how this film came to be. Because he said that his first priority was to preserve the dialogue in the book as much as possible. And if you're kind of a screenwriting nerd such as I am, it's really cool to read the book as I'm reading it again now for the umpteenth time and notice these long scenes in the book that are expertly cut down by Scott Frank. Like, there's a lot more going on in scenes like the coat scene. You know, there's this whole flashback to like Chili's marriage and divorce and all this kind of stuff. But the way that Scott Frank sort of surgically understands which parts of the story in a movie will move things forward the way that we have to is part of the pleasure of reading the book and then watching the film. So if you really like a movie like this, this theme by Us Three is so good. This is Chili's theme. Listen to how this layers on itself as we go over the credits. How great the solo is played. I don't know who played that solo. It sounds like Larry Carlton to me. I'm gonna have to look that up. It'd be amazing if I was right. Let's just pretend I was. What's incredible about this soundtrack is this could be from the 60s, as many of the other cuts are. They play Green Onions, the famous track. But this is composed, you know, in 95, 96 when this film comes out. And John Lurie, who is credited as music by John Lurie, you know, you could be faulted for giving him credit for this song, as I did, until I really jumped into what's really going on with the soundtrack. I realized that he did compose a lot of great interstitial music, but a lot of the most groovy tracks are pre-existing and are put onto the soundtrack. So the film comes from, as I said, Jersey Films, which is a production company run by Danny DeVito, Stacey Scher, and I think Michael Schamburg. And I don't know if it's still in existence, but man, they had a great run. It's probably one of the most successful actor-led production companies that I could think of. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about who was considered for this film before they cast the actors that you see on screen. Because it's kind of funny. There's at least one little funny anecdote here. The cast that we have, as you know, it's John Travolta, Gene Hackman, Rene Russo, Delroy Lindo, a great Jim Gandolfini performance early in his career, Dennis Farina, and Danny DeVito. Now, apparently, talking about the Elmore Leonard and the Ray Nicolette cinematic universe, among the actors offered the role of Chili Palmer were Warren Beatty, Dustin Hoffman, and Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton, of course, played Ray Nicolette in two unrelated films, Tarantino's Jackie Brown, which I've done an episode on, and Soderbergh's Out of Sight. I read a thing that said that Warren Beatty asked Sonnenfeld why he would play Chili Palmer, because he said, quote, "I'm too good looking to be a mobster," or "I'm too good looking to be a low level Shylock for the mob." Dustin Hoffman, whether it's it's not Dustin Hoffman who informs Danny DeVito's brilliant portrayal of the actor Martin Weir in the film, but it is Dustin Hoffman who is the inspiration for the character known as Michael Weir in the original book by the author Elmore Leonard. I'm not sure where they crossed paths, but during some previous adaptation of Elmore Leonard's work, he entered into the Dustin Hoffman reality distortion field, which we've probably discussed a couple of times on the podcast on episodes related to Dustin Hoffman, such as All the President's Men, Midnight Cowboy. Dustin Hoffman was famous in his heyday for agonizingly circling projects without ever committing and asking 1.5 million detailed, psychologically layered questions about these roles, driving everyone up a wall, but it must be said, also making brilliant suggestions as part of this torturous process. But that's what he's really known for. And Elmore Leonard wrote the character of Michael Weir. I'm not sure why they changed it to Martin for the film, but Martin is a better, more pretentious actor name than Michael, so maybe that's why. But it's completely based on Dustin Hoffman. Dustin Hoffman knew this when the book came out. He knew it when the movie came out, and that's probably why he turned it down. Michael Keaton as Chili Palmer would have been really fascinating. Now, the Bull Catlett role, which is the Delroy Lindo role, Sonnenfeld, the director, considered Samuel L. Jackson, and Steve Buscemi and Matthew McConaughey were considered for the role of Ronnie Wingate, who I just realized, how many times have I seen this film? He's played by John Grease. I didn't realize until just now that John Grease is what's-her-name's love interest in The White Lotus. He is Jennifer Coolidge's love interest in season one, and I believe season two. I haven't actually seen season two yet. He plays Greg, who is Tanya's boyfriend. So John Grease is great and fantastic. So that's a little bit of, there's really not much. You know, this is a film that deserves much more making of stuff than there is, because I bet the stories are great. These people are having such a fun time. There's so many great scenes, including this one with Dennis Farina as Ray Barboni.
These guys fit you for a rug, cover it up for you.
You two geezers take your Gabe to the park.
This man is the man. You understand what I'm saying, motherfucker? He's Mr. Bones, and you speak to Mr. Bones from now on.
Come on, you can do better than him, can't you?
Not these days, not unless you speak Spanish.
That is such a perfect Elmore Leonard moment that is so perfectly captured here. You know, Ray Bones, Ray Barboni, portrayed by Dennis Farina as this bumbling, threatening clown of a mob enforcer, has this guy as his muscle in Miami. And just that answer when Travolta's like not buying his threatening shtick, and Travolta's like, you can do better than this guy.
This man is the man. You understand what I'm saying, motherfucker? He's Mr. Bones, and you speak to Mr. Bones from now on.
Come on, you can do better than him, can't you?
Not these days, not unless you speak Spanish.
It's like, it's just business, man. He's threatening him, but he doesn't have anything invested in it. And Farina's so good.
Yeah, he told me that he was dead.
Personally?
Yeah, Ray, he personally told me that he got killed in that getaway jet crash that happened a month ago.
Well, maybe he took out some flight insurance. Go check with his wife.
You check it out. It's your book now. He owns some dry cleaning store over on Federal Highway.
Let me explain something to you. Bobo is dead, which means that everything he had now belongs to Jimmy Capp, including you, which also means that when I speak for Jimmy. E.g., from now on, you start showing me the proper fucking respect.
E.g. means for example. What I think you want to say is I.E.
Bullshit. It's short for ergo.
Ask your man.
To best of my knowledge, EG mean for example.
E-G-I-E, fuck you. The point is this, is that when I say jump, you say okay, okay?
Yeah, right. Okay, all right.
I mean, that's Elmore Leonard dialogue, you know? That's not Scott Frank dialogue. But Scott Frank is smart enough to know that in this long scene in the book, this is what you have to have. And Farina is so good. There's nobody who isn't perfectly pitched. It's a collection of brilliant performances. Remember, I was talking a couple episodes about someone saying that different directors approach movies differently, and that Alan J. Pakula, we're talking about Clute in my Clute episode, that his philosophy was audiences will always turn up to see a film that they've heard has a great central performance, right? So Jane Fonda in Clute, Meryl Streep in Sophie's Choice, like Dustin Hoffman and or Robert Redford in All the President's Men, Warren Beatty in The Parallax View. All of these Alan J. Pakula films have these central performances that are a thing of appreciation and beauty. The person was saying that Mike Nichols, as a director, approached films like a collection of great scenes. This is both. Get Shorty is both. It's a collection of great scenes populated by fantastic actors doing really top-notch performances. And to a person, they're letter perfect. Now, again, we're here in this fascinating moment in Travolta's career, kind of alone in many stories about careers as storied as Travolta's, because this is, as I said, only 1 year removed from his return to cool in Tarantino's Pulp Fiction. And to turn in a performance like this, which is like, my God, from Three Men and a Baby to this, you know, he is, it's just such a great reminder that what we think we know or think about stars or where they are in their careers oftentimes has nothing to do with their talent and their ability, and everything to do with the fickle whims, appreciations, and crushes of an industry that doesn't love them back. And for Travolta to do this performance, to get the chance to do this performance, to embody Chili Palmer, it's hard to think of any of those other actors doing this part. They don't embody it the way he does. And with the introduction of Gene Hackman,
system. I get 2800.
Chili breaks into Karen Flores's house to confront Harry Zim, a down on his luck producer.
Jesus Christ.
How you doing? I'm Chili Palmer.
Oh, Jesus. If I have a heart attack, I hope you know what to do.
Where you been, Harry?
Have we met? I don't recall.
We just did. I told you my name's Chili Palmer.
Well, your pictures, right? Did you ever stop to think what would happen if I had a heart attack?
Look at me, Harry.
I'm looking at you.
I want you to keep looking at me right here.
Well, that's what I'm doing.
You know Dick Allen? Mace's Casino?
Well, that's what this is. You're a collector for the fucking casino, huh? You come in here in the middle of the night. I thought you were an actor auditioning, for Christ's sakes. We'll see about this.
In the book, Chili loves that Harry Zim mistakes him for an actor. And Hackman wasn't sure he could do this role. Hackman told, I believe, Sonnenfeld, you know, I'm not a comedic actor. I don't have these types of chops that a Danny DeVito has or a Travolta has, people that are known for playing comedy. But Sonnenfeld told Gene Hackman, no, what you have to do here is play this straight. The writing in the screenplay is so good that you just play it straight and the comedy will be there. You don't have to mug. You don't have to be comedic. Now, of course, it turns out Hackman is brilliant, has a brilliant flair for comedy.
Tell me, Harry.
Why do I have to keep looking at you?
Because I want you to.
So now you're going to get rough, huh? I make good by tomorrow, you're going to break my legs.
Come on, Harry, Mace's.
You tell Dick Allen I'll cover those markers in the next 60 days at the most. If he doesn't like it, then that's his problem. The fucking prick. So, you want me to call you a cab?
So you make movies, huh?
I produce feature motion pictures. No TV. You mentioned Grotesque before. That happens to be Grotesque Part 2 that Karen Flores was in. She also starred in 3 of my Slime Creatures releases. You may have seen them.
What's great to me about this performance is akin to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This film doesn't talk down to the Harry Zim character. Yes, he's comedic and cartoonish, but he's a part of the filmmaking infrastructure. He's recognized as such by even a star on top, like Martin Weir, portrayed by Danny DeVito. You know, this sense that all of these characters are playing in the same fishbowl is what's great about the book and the movie. And here comes Rene Russo, great Karen, as Karen,
Karen
Flores.
Hey, say hello to Chili Palmer. Chili, this is Karen Flores.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Karen.
How'd you get in the house?
He just told me an idea for a movie. It's not bad so far. Sit down, have a drink. Tell Karen, see what she thinks.
Maybe you didn't hear me.
Well, I came in the back door.
You broke in?
Well, it was open. It wasn't locked.
Huh. Well, what if it were?
You want to hear this idea? It's about this dry cleaner that scams the airline out of 300 grand. Tell her.
Well, it's simple. It's basically about a guy who owes a Shylock $15,000, and he's about 3 weeks over on the VIG. That's the interest you have to pay.
I know what VIG is.
Anyway, this dry cleaner, let's call him Leo, right? He's scared. He doesn't know any better.
There's a little bit in that screenplay there where she knows what VIG is. You know, it's a screenwriter thing. This actually isn't in the book. I think people have written about this before. There's examples of female characters that are written by male screenwriters who display qualities and characteristics that men supposedly would like. Like, she really understands gambling terminology. She knows what VIG is. You know, they do this a lot. There's an ESPN commercial that drives me up a fucking wall, which features this same construct where the setup is a college reunion and two women, one of whom is played by an ESPN anchor, sort of like interact over the idiocy of the men in their lives. And they have this conversation about gambling.
Ask her. I'm not going to ask her. Are you an alum here?
No, I'm married to Tim.
Ah, shiver me Timbo. Did he ever tell you the inner tube water polo story?
Yes, I have heard that a lot this weekend.
Hey, guys!
Timmy Timbo, you got married?
Where's the invite, dude? I crush
you
at weddings.
Oh, you got married.
Are you betting against the home team at their own homecoming?
They are so soft against the run.
And their secondary's trash. Just remember to act sad when they lose.
Because it's an ad for like an ESPN bet app, of course. They have a conversation about gambling that, you know, not to be sexist, it's not even a conversation any two people would have about gambling, let alone these two women as portrayed in this ad. And it's just so clearly designed to try to be something that it isn't. There's a little bit of that in that I know what VIG is, but in the book, this, I think, is a convenient way for the sparks between Karen and Chili to be recognized, because even though she's with, in quotes, Harry Zim at this point of the film, she and Chili are going to have a romance. And this is part of what's great about Travolta in this, is that he gets to do everything. He gets to be a mob heavy. He gets to be the coolest guy on screen. He gets to be threatening. He gets to be funny. He gets to beat people up. He gets to outsmart people. He gets to be underestimated by people who think they're smarter than he is, and he allows them to think that. It's just such a brilliant role. He's effortlessly brilliant in it. And it's not just what's on the page. That's, of course, a lot of it. It's just that he embodies this character, you know, more so than, I don't want to say more so than the book. I have this thing when I see a movie like this, and I'm a huge Elmore Leonard fan. In my mind, in my heart, I want the actors to have all read the book and appreciate it as much as I do. And in my mind, I tell myself that they all sat down and they read this book all the way through before they agreed to do the film or after they agreed to do the film as part of their preparation. Now, the sad truth is it doesn't really matter, right? Like, Scott Frank did such a great job adapting this book that they can simply act the script that is given to them and understand the characters and deliver something as perfectly pitched as they all are in this film. But in my mind, I want them to have read the book. Why? I don't know. That's just some of the weirdness that I have. So Gene Hackman is so good, as is Delroy Lindo. This is how we meet him.
That's us.
Reading Variety. This is just a great little indication of the one industry town that Hollywood is that the limo drivers are a part of the ecosystem. Harry Zim is part of the ecosystem. Delroy Lindo, brilliant. You know, he embodies a certain Elmore Leonard-ness where he's one of the bad guys in the film, but the good guys and the bad guys are, of course, not so distant, not so dissimilar from each other. I know that's the oldest trope in the book. But as we see in later scenes where Delroy and Travolta go toe-to-toe in dialogue and conversation, you know, they're very equally matched. They're not so unalike, except that there's an essential decency and moral core to Chili that Travolta embodies without necessarily verbally bringing it to life all the time.
Now, be looking. Man over to your right in the blue wool shirt hanging out the other way. Derecho. That's a federal officer. Most likely DEA. He moves his leg, you look for the bulge. You savvy, Bulge? Good. That's his backup piece. Hey, try it without looking right at him, if you can. What's your name?
Yayo Portillo.
All right, Yayo, you know he's there. Just forget about him. I'm gonna get up. As soon as I'm gone, you sit down in the same seat I'm in. You feel something under your ass that's a key to a lockup where your $500,000 is, along with some product we're returning. Powder's been stepped on so many times as baby food.
Hey. And you're supposed to give me the money yourself.
Try to be cool, Yahoo.
Yahoo. This is all in the book. You know, I don't know why. I geek out over a great adaptation of a great book. Because you can have appreciation for Scott Frank combing through the book and putting into the screenplay the important stuff. What you realize as a fan of the book is the important stuff. The character nuance stuff. You know what's another great example of that that I've done on the podcast? Not to be self-referential. But Peter Weir's adaptation of Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World with Russell Crowe, which of course every 55-year-old white male such as myself is constitutionally required to be obsessed with, as was written to some hilarious effect in a New York magazine article, I believe. That's a great adaptation as well, and a more complicated one because those books are so, so dense and so laden with obscure nautical arcana. Yet, and I don't know if Peter Weir adapted that screenplay or there was another screenwriter, but whoever did that was a surgical genius. Now, much as I loved the driving in LA scenes in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, we have a nice driving scene between Chili and Harry Zim.
There's a 700-pound fat lady has a way of seducing guys, gets them in her trailer.
Harry, look at me. You're trying to tell me that you fucked up without sounding stupid, and that's hard to do. Let's talk about where you're at, okay? You blew 200 grand of these limo guys' money on a football game in Vegas, and you didn't tell them. Now, why?
They don't seem like the type of guys that would take it with any understanding or restraint. First thing they'd do is break my legs.
Well, you got that on the brain, but if you were so scared, why'd you take it to Vegas to begin with?
I needed $500,000 to buy a script.
A movie script?
Blockbuster, but quality. No mutants or maniacs. It's going to be my driving Miss Daisy.
They're so good together. Gene Hackman was in the news last week because some paparazzo took a photo of him at 94 with a cane. He's 94, guys. You know, he's old. Yeah. But he's out there doing his life. And he's so robust and brilliant here. It's a great opportunity to revisit a brilliant Gene Hackman performance. It's one of his best. You know, he so perfectly embodies Harry Zim.
Was he following someone?
Read it. It's a grammar.
What I love about Chili, too, is he's not a reader. In the book and in the movie, he never reads the screenplay of the movie he's invested in. And when the limo guys show up, there's a great little thing here where Chili is the screenwriter and the director.
I want the limo guys to sit in these chairs, not in the couch. You got that?
Yeah.
No, no, no. Keep the blinds open. I want the light in their eyes. I'm going to sit at the desk, and I don't want you to introduce me. Just start talking. And I want you to stand here behind them as they sit down. You understand?
Well, yeah, yeah. They'll be looking at you, but they don't know who you are.
Yeah, that's right. They'll be saying, who is this guy, right? But you don't say anything. Do not tell them who I am, okay? Don't introduce me.
Yeah, well, I got to say something to them.
No, you don't. You don't say any more than you have to. Unless you want to say something like, glad you asked, so stop by. Now I can straighten you out.
You're kidding, right?
I just say the movie's been postponed a year, but don't tell them why. Whatever you do, don't say anything about Mr. Lovejoy. You got that? All right, let's go.
What's great about Travolta's performance here, when you watch this, watch the physicality, his hand gestures, the way he lights cigarettes. You know, as I mentioned before, I think De Palma talked about Travolta's background as a dancer. You know, he was a dancer before he was an actor. And obviously, Saturday Night Fever, one of the most iconic dance roles in the history of cinema. But as Chili Palmer, the way he walks has a rhythm. It has a dancer's control, and his gesticulations and the way he does everything are informed by this sense of physical control that Travolta has over his body and the way he moves through the frame, which is what De Palma talked about in the episode I did about the great film Blowout.
This is going to be put off for a couple of months.
A couple of months?
Harry's such a bad liar.
Just a couple of months, yeah. We need more, prep.
Hey, Harry, prep. Bullshit, man. We have an agreement with you.
No, we're going to do this picture. We are going to do this picture. I just have another project to do first, one I promised this guy for years.
I want to see your books, Harry. Just show me where it is. A 2 with 5 zeros after it in black and white. I want to see your books. I want to see your fucking bank statements.
Hey, Ronnie, look at me. You have a piece of a movie. That's all. Not a piece of Harry. If he wants to do another movie this year, that's how it's going to be.
Excuse me, bro, but who the fuck are you?
I'm the one telling you how it is.
What is this other movie you're doing first, Harry?
Oh, let me
Harry, show. Harry, let me answer this one. First of all, who am I talking to? Am I talking to him or am I talking to you?
You can talk to me.
That's what I thought. Let me put it this way. Outside of Freaks, it's none of your fucking business what we do.
Oh, whoa.
It's just so good. You know, I love scenes where there's a ping pong ball of control being batted around and someone like Travolta is in full command of taking command. It's one of the things that works so great in the film. And the Travolta's good with everyone in the movie. That's one of the most interesting things. Like, he's great with Rene Russo. He's great with Gene Hackman. He's great with Danny DeVito. He's great with David Paymer, the great David Paymer, one of the VIP that guys of all time, who we are so grateful to have alive in our cinematic time, because he so purposefully and fully portrays a bunch of bumbling idiots so well, as he does here, playing Leo DeVoe, the dry cleaner, who absconded with 300 grand of the mob's money. Chili's signature line, as you know, is, look at me.
Leo, look at me. I'd have never thought you'd be so dumb, leaving over 300 grand in a closet under an extra blanket, but I guess you are.
I didn't know where else to keep it. Where would you?
How about a bank?
No, they report it to the IRS.
Well, you don't open an account. You put in a safe deposit box. You dip in it whenever you want.
How did you know that I was here?
Love his intonation. How did you know that I was here? That's the David Paymer-ness.
It was fate, wasn't it? Told you about the money? What, you tell you my whole life history, for Christ's sake?
Leo, I'm here to save your ass.
How? By taking my money?
No, you get to keep the money that you won today. That's yours.
It's all mine.
Leo, sit down.
David Paymer, man. Genius. You know what he's great in? Quiz Show. I love that.
I'm going to explain why. I
hope you're not surprised. And that's why Travolta is just so magnificent as a performer. You know, he's giving, but he's always in control. And even when he's opposite Delroy Lindo here. Another great two-hand scene.
Saying this wasn't any good, but holding on to it, like, man, you'd have to break his fingers to get it away from him.
That's funny, because I was thinking, what am I going to have to break of yours to get away from you?
Now I'm explaining to you what I'm doing here. In case you thought I came to rob the place or rip off any of this dusty old shit that the man has.
I wouldn't make you out to be a burglar, not in that outfit.
Harry called you his associate. What does that mean? Man, I never heard your name or read it in the Hollywood Reporter or Variety or any place.
It's what he said. I'm his associate.
You must bring something heavy to the deal.
I do. Me.
It says here you're getting Martin Weir for the part of Lovejoy.
That's right. We're getting Martin.
Come on. How are you going to do that?
I'm going to take a gun. I'm going to put it to his head. And I'm going to say, sign the fucking papers, Martin, or you're dead. That's it.
I wonder, would that work? You know who I see for the part of Al Roxy? Harvey Keitel, Mank played in his sleep.
He's pretty good. He was pretty good in that movie Fingers.
I missed that one. You know who else? Morgan Freeman. You know Morgan's work?
Morgan Freeman, yeah. But he's a colored guy, though.
So what? Or where's it saying the script the man's got to be white? Color's what the part needs, man. You need somebody to do it with some style.
What's great here in a bit of self-referential moment in the film is, of course, Delroy Lindo is doing the part of Bo Catlett with some style. In the book, Bo Catlett's race is a little bit undetermined by key characters like Harry Zim and Chili Palmer. No one can figure out what he is. And that's kind of part of the role. So it's a little bit, I think, of self-referential casting and screenwriting here, because I don't remember that part. Actually, I think that is in the book. So you need someone to do it with some style. I think that is in the book. This is just a great two-hand scene between two extremely competent veteran actors who are fully aware of the balance of power as it ping-pongs around in the scene. I just love that. I can't get enough of that between actors because there's a humility in it, right? To be Delroy Lindo, it's human nature. You want your character to be in control, and you're so invested in your character that it's probably requires a certain skill to understand when you need to allow your character, as they do in movies, as doesn't really happen in regular life, to be cowed or to have someone else get the last word in. That's a construct that happens in the movies, but if you've ever had an argument in real life, people don't back down just because you had a clever riposte, right? They entrench. They dig in. But in a movie, in a two-hand scene like this, when Chili assumes control, the Delroy Lindo character, the Bo Catlett character, has to cede the ground there.
Look at the script.
Well, the first thing that's got to go is the title. I mean, this writer's name, Murray Saffron, would be better than Lovejoy.
Now, I'm with you on that one. You know what I'm thinking? Why don't you and I, we sit down, we write the script over where it needs it.
You could write one of these.
There's nothing to it. All you do, you get an idea, you set down what you want to say on paper. Then you hire somebody else to fill in the commas and shit where they belong, if you're not positive yourself. Maybe fix up the spelling where you have some tricky words. Although, I've seen some scripts, I know the words weren't spelled right. There was hardly any commas in it at all. So I don't think that's too important.
I love that little dialogue. This is, again, verbatim in the novel. And such a truism, really. And what's great here is this is a great representation of what exists in a lot of Elmore Leonard novels, where the good guy and the bad guy in the book, the antagonist and the protagonist in the book, have these moments where they can get along, right? Think De Niro, Pacino, Heat, Kate Mantellini, diner scene where antagonist and protagonist, or they're both antagonists to each other, their characters meet and they have this little tete-a-tete and they like each other. You know, they're cut not from such different cloth. Again, it's a cliche, but when done well, it's effective in a movie like this. Elmore Leonard's books have a lot of scenes like that are really well done. This is one of them.
All right, you get to the end. You write in, fade out. You're done.
That's it.
That's it.
That's all there is to it. Then what the fuck do I need you for?
Because I'm offering my services on this one, man.
Well, I'll tell you what. If I need a ride sometime, I'll let you know.
And see that slow burn that Bo Catlett does at the end of this scene, is what I'm talking about. That's a construct. I love looking for that in movies and seeing where it is. And the film at about the halfway point comes alive in a new way when we meet the brilliance of DeVito's portrayal of Martin Weir. It's just, it's again, it's so good. It's based on Dustin Hoffman. It's a great send up of the self-involved, pretentious actor in this package, you know, in a five foot tall kind of package. And again, these great scenes between these actors, DeVito's just having such a fun.
Oh, you smell so good. She always smells so good.
Meet Martin. This is Chili Palmer.
Chili, is it?
Nice to meet you, Martin.
Chili's a gangster. Ran a club I used to play at for another gangster back in Miami. How is Momo these days, anyway?
Dead.
Bummer. Well, I'll let you get to your movie talk. Chili, do not leave without saying goodbye to me.
Yeah. So.
Of course, he has
you know how beautiful you are?
Painting of himself.
You really are beautiful. I'm sitting here. I'm looking at you. I'm having flashbacks of memories of us.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm wondering, how did it go wrong? How did it all slip away?
Well, it didn't slip away, Martin. You did when you went off to fuck Nikki at my birthday party.
Yeah, that was a good party.
You know, Marty, you were so good in that movie, The Cyclone.
Martin. Yeah, that was a beautiful role.
He doesn't like to be called Marty.
All I had to do was find the character's center.
I think that's, right? Is that a callback? Is that like a reference to Dustin Hoffman not liking to be called Dusty? Wanting to be called Dustin?
Fink part. Oh, man. Jesus Christ. I mean, look, I never met a Fink, and I hope to God I never do.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the way you play the Fink, that's how it's got to be, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, 2 weeks before we started shooting, I went back to Bensonhurst just to hear you guys talk. See, I'm Italian, but I grew up in Tarzana. So I wanted to get the rhythms of your speech.
Oh, we speak differently?
Well, it's more like your attitude, your tone. Your speech patterns demonstrate a certain confidence in yourselves, in your opinions, your indifference to conventional views, you know, just like...
Like we don't give a shit.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. So anyway, once I get the authentic sounds of speech, the rhythms, the patois, you know, I can actually get into their heads. I can actually think the way those guys do.
What's brilliant is Renee Russo is used in this scene as a bullshit detector, and she does it really, really well. When these two guys are pontificating and going off, she's just kind of not rolling her eyes ostentatiously, but just with these subtle cutaways, Sonnenfeld shows that Karen understands it's all bullshit in such a great way.
Inside.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm one of those guys. What am I thinking?
Well, don't get me wrong. An actual metamorphosis doesn't take place. That wouldn't be acting.
So you don't know what I'm thinking?
No, I don't. But I have to say I'm curious.
So you want to know what I'm thinking?
Yeah, if you want to tell me.
I'm thinking about a movie.
One of mine?
No, one that we're producing.
With what? Wise guy money.
Maybe this wasn't such a good idea.
No. Look, Martin, I'm not connected to that anymore. Not since I left that loan sharking operation in Miami.
What's the matter? The pressure got too much for you?
Pressure? I'm the one who applied the pressure.
Oh, yeah?
Now, Martin, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You're an actor. Actors like to pretend, right?
We've been known to make believe.
Pretend this. You're a Shylock.
Mm-hmm.
A guy owes you 15 grand, and he skips town, he takes off. What are you doing?
These scenes are so good. Again, totally verbatim from the book and so brilliantly brought to life by Danny DeVito. And.
Oh, Martin, for Christ's sake. Just, you know.
I'm doing Shylock instead of a Shylock.
Right.
All right, what's my motivation? The acquisition of money. Collect.
It's so good.
Inflict pain if I have.
I wish someone could make. Mm-hmm. These movies,
an entry in my book.
That's, you know,
not bad.
With this type of caliber of actor and fealty to the vibe of Elmore Leonard. And what's great is, you know, Gandolfini plays Bo Catlett's kind of tough guy. And this is pre-Sopranos, obviously. But, you know, you can witness how someone who has it, you know, has it before everyone realizes he has it, because it's not a big part, but Gandolfini does a lot with it. He imbues the character of the bear with this wistful innocence in a way. This is another example of the music being cut to Travolta's strut so well.
Movie stuntman, champion weightlifter, as you might have noticed. Throws things out I don't want.
I think you ought to turn around and go back to Miami.
You're a stuntman, huh?
Yeah.
You any good?
Am I any good?
And whoever the stuntman was, he executed a great leap, as
not bad for a guy his son.
Cliff Booth would say.
I'll make you a deal. If you can get out of here before I take my coat off, I won't clean up the floor with you and mess up your pretty little costume.
You don't know me. You only think you do.
You know, Chili out-alphas him. Bo Catlett wears the most kind of hilarious. He does wear costumes. And another great cameo that occurs in this film is when the force of nature that is Bette Midler appears.
Hello, Doris.
Harry Zim, you look like a wet kiss. Yum. Well, aren't you going to offer me whatever it is you taste like?
I mean, this is just a great role for an actor.
My favorite color, putty.
She has two scenes in the movie.
I like it.
She gets to come in.
What do you want, Doris?
Be the femme fatale, steal this scene, and do so much.
I miss Murray.
A pro's pro, yeah, through and through.
Hell of a good writer, you know. I should
Harry's
know.
Apartment, by the way, is brilliantly styled.
What he was a hack. He couldn't get a job writing for anybody but you. I'm being honest. He was a lousy writer, but he was a good husband. I just didn't know until it was too late.
Yeah, well, 20/20 hindsight and all that, you know what they say.
I hate being alone.
Hackman's disinterest is so well acted here, and it pays off at the end of the scene.
It needs a man's touch.
Nice necklace, Doris.
Doris looks pretty damn good, even Harry has to say.
Doris.
I love the end of this
scene.
I
don't know how I feel about this.
Mm. You seem to feel fine about it.
I mean, morally, you know, Murray was a friend.
Murray's dead.
Murray's dead.
Does this mean that you're going to reconsider our deal on Mr. Lovejoy?
No, but now that you mention it, I did talk to a gorgeous young executive over at Paramount the other day who just happened to get his hands on the script.
Well, what'd he say?
He said if Martin's interested, I can get $500,000 for it. Easy. Oh, don't worry, Harry. I'm still going to give you till Friday.
How honorable of you.
Harry, you want me to go? Just say so.
It's a great turn here from Hackman.
To hell.
It's just two old pros so good together in this scene. Oh, and she's brilliant at the end. She has a hilarious a moment at the end. This is a great scene where Ray Bones is on the toilet. And here's Harry being a tough guy on the telephone that he learned from Chili Palmer.
What?
Ray Barboni?
Who is this?
Is this the guy they call Ray Bones?
It depends. Who is this?
Who is this?
This is the one telling you the way it is. Okay, asshole? Now, you want your 300 grand, or don't you? What 300 grand are you talking about? The 300 grand a guy named Leo DeVoe scammed off an airline. The 300 grand that
Chili Palmer now has in his possession.
Hello? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I just don't like this anonymous crap. It means you're either a big chicken shit or you're not for real.
Trust me, I am very for real.
Okay, then, so who are you?
I happen to work for Harry Zim, all right?
Who?
Harry Zim, the man happens to be a major Hollywood player.
I never heard of him.
Maybe that's because you've never been out of
fucking Miami, dipshit. Maybe you ought to get on a plane,
come out to L.A., take a meeting with Mr. Zim.
Okay, so this Zim guy, what is he asking for? A finder's fee or something? Is that what we're talking about here?
Hey, Zim don't ask for dick. Zim tells you the way it is, or else.
Or else what?
Or else use your fucking imagination.
What's genius is this. Gene Hackman looks impressed with himself and then scratches the back of his hair. It's so, so well done. You know, I just love professional acting. And when you see it executed at this caliber, it's so enjoyable. It's just fun to watch. And, you know, there's some subplots here where you have the drug dealer from Miami coming through and, you know, Chili running a game on the FBI guys. This is a really funny bit where Barbone is picked up by the world's most annoying limo driver.
Mr. Barbone, you ever want to go to the beach? Here's the freeway you take that we're on. Of course, on the weekend, there's no traffic.
I'm from Miami fucking beach, and you want to show me the ocean, huh? And what about the sun? Does it ever shine in this town, or is there smog around all the time?
They say the smog's the reason we have such beautiful sunsets.
That's what they say, huh? What a bunch of fucking bullshit.
That line that the limo guy has is verbatim in the book. You know, if you ever want to go to the beach, this is the exit for the freeway that we're on. I love this scene between Travolta and Gandolfini.
Gee, I don't know how I could have missed you in that shirt. It's the same as the other one, except a different colored hibiscus. Is that right?
So what, you didn't have the key on you?
You think I'd be standing here? If you're going to set someone up and you want it to work, it's got to be a surprise. Can you remember that?
Spotted him, huh?
What, did you see it work in some movie that you got beat up in?
Gotta ask you for that key back.
Wait a minute. The setup didn't work and you want the key back?
Bo said if you didn't open the locker, the deal's off.
You serious? This is how you guys do business? I'm surprised you're not dead. Look, there's no fucking way you're gonna get the key, okay? Unless you put a gun to my head and then maybe we'll talk. Now move away from the fucking car.
I don't need a gun for you.
Now, Chili expertly dismantles Bear here in three shots, but he helps him to the ground.
All right. Slow down. Breathe through your mouth slow. Breathe. Bear, look at me. You tell your boss I don't ever want to see him again. He made a deal with Harry, and a deal's a deal. You got that? Okay, get up.
Now, I love this part here.
What Chili's, are you hanging around a guy like that?
Chili's got
anyway,
a heart.
Huh? I mean, you were in the movies. You're a stuntman, right? What's he ever done that he can talk about? You okay?
Not too bad.
How about when you fell down the stairs?
Pulled my quadriceps.
So how many movies you been in?
About 60.
Oh, shit.
No shit.
What were some of them?
You didn't see none of them.
Oh, you wouldn't know anyway. What's so great about that, man, I just love the control that Travolta has here.
When you were in the movies, you were a stuntman, right? What's he ever done that he can talk about?
When he delivers that line, watch the movie. When he says, what's he ever done that he can talk about? He looks away. He's upset because he appreciates what Bear has done as a stuntman. He's been in the movie business. Chili, like Elmore Leonard, he appreciates anyone who clawed out an existence in that cutthroat world. And his awareness of that is what Travolta puts in his eyes and in his turn of his head here. And I love this dialogue between the two of them because the sly smile that Gandolfini has when he answers Chili's question, so how many movies you've been in? He says, about 60. Look at the sly smile. Gandolfini loves it too, just like Chili does. You know, he's in it.
You okay?
Not too bad.
How about when you fell down the stairs?
hold my quadriceps.
So how many movies you been in?
About 60.
Oh, shit.
No shit.
What were some of them?
You didn't see none of them.
I mean, the humility of Bear. Oh, you never seen none of them. Oh, you would know him. That's so genius. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. When you watch this performance, it's like Gandolfini had everything, you know, he just needed the opportunity. It's just such an interesting and heartbreaking parallel to someone like Travolta's career where, you know, Travolta was on top, the biggest male star in Hollywood in his era. Through whatever, changing taste, changing times, audience expectations, audiences moving on, you know, he falls into the three men and a baby phase of his career. And then someone like Tarantino, who appreciates even that phase of an actor's career, the way that Chili appreciates Bear's 60 movie career as a stuntman, you know, offers him an opportunity, and all he needs is an opportunity to show what he was always capable of with the right material. And that's what this movie about making movies contains, amongst other things. This is a little referential.
Well, I mean, I could see myself in the parts of Robert De Niro plays, you know, or maybe even a Al Pacino movie, you know, playing real hard on, but I couldn't see myself in the movies where, like, the three guys get left with a baby. And they don't know how to take care of it, so they act like three grown-up assholes, like acting real cute and everything. I couldn't.
You know, that's the little self-referential moment to. I love this throwaway line from Bette Midler here at the end of the scene where she knows the two studly policemen by name in the hospital. She says, "Hi, good night, Todd." It's so funny. Let me find this part. Where does she say it?
Hello.
I don't know if it's at the beginning here. Of course, she knows the two good-looking cops in the hospital.
What can I tell you? I stopped by his office to see if he wanted to take me to Le Dome for dinner when I see Harry and some other man lying on the floor. Good night, Todd. Night, Lewis.
Todd and Lewis, the two cops. It's just so good. Oh, Bette Midler. You know, it's just the kind of movie where you can have that moment. There's a great Gandolfini thing here.
I got to take Farrah over to Mother's in Costa Mesa. And that don't matter because I quit. I don't work for you no more. I just came down here to tell you right to your face so we got no misunderstanding.
There, the Colombians are in L.A. all upset about their money. Now, if that ain't enough, it turns out as a bonus, the yo-yo was Escobar's nephew.
That's your problem. You wouldn't have shot the guy.
Farrah? Hey, honey bunny. Come here, Farrah. Come here, honey.
Here's
bunny.
Where Bo Catlett proves himself to be as evil.
Yeah, you know Uncle Bo hates being alone.
He's, you know, the fact, bear is a good so dad, much, loves his daughter.
He takes a fall, he's not gonna fall by himself. He's gonna plea deal his way out. Give up his ace stunt man, now one of the West Coast dope kings, if they go easy on the cat. You know, I hear in federal joints, they let you spend an extra 5 minutes with your daddy on Father's Day.
Just let her go, Bo.
The way he hugs his daughter.
This one, I'm out, you understand? It's the last time we talked to each other.
You remember Harry's story about the dry cleaner Palmer was after? The one who stole it.
What's great here is in a nice little bit of Elmore Leonard-ness at the end of this film, it turns out that Chili and the bear, I guess, kind of conspired against Bo Catlett when Bo meets his end. Before that, though, this is one of my ultimate favorite scenes in the film. It reminds me of a scene in The Player when Tim Robbins enters the restaurant. The bullshit around Hollywood restaurants is so good, and it's so well depicted here. Listen for how DeVito perfectly embodies the actor who pretends to be interested in his server's name, and it's presaged by Karen telling Chili that actors never order off the menu. They always have to order something specific and annoying. It's all in this scene. It's so well done. As is the fact that Harry, having now supposedly shot someone, is famous and gets a great table, whereas the day before he was a nobody.
Mr. Zim.
Hey, Harry. Attaboy, killer.
Right. I believe that's Jan Michael Vincent saying "that a boy killer," or maybe David Keith. I'm not sure which one.
You're a celebrity, Harry. You should have shot someone a long time ago.
As is the fact that Martin is now driving the same minivan that Chili had at his house.
Hi.
DeVito's so good at this. Hey, how are you? Hi.
Hi. Excuse me. How you doing? Hello. Hi. How you doing? Whoa. Hey, Chili.
Hey, good to see
Boy,
you.
Man. Great to see you.
Wow, Harry.
Oh, my goodness.
Hi, Mom.
Sweet face. Hey, you look great.
Mm.
You smell good, too.
Thanks.
Yeah, so, Harry. I hear you had quite an experience. Well, anyway, I'm glad you're okay. You know what else? I'm really glad that you rejected me 10 years ago when I auditioned for the part of Eddie Solomon, the pedophile clown and birthday boy. If I'd have gotten that part, I might have been typecast. Have you guys ordered? Because I really have something after this. Can we order? Excuse me, can you... Hi, what's your name?
Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie. I feel like an omelet. Can you make an egg white omelet? But with shallots, but with the shallots only slightly brown, very little olive oil, and no salt. Okay, why don't you bring one for the table? We'll pick on it.
No.
I know. How about having those strawberry frappes? You know, little drinks with little strawberries in them? And bring two straws for Harry.
Just effortlessly.
Anyway,
you know.
I think the romance angle in your story is critically important. I mean, this shouldn't be just a hop in a sack for either of them. These two should fall deeply in love.
Which two?
And then later, when their lives are in danger and the mob guy is chasing them, it not only heightens the tension, but it adds a wistful element to their romance.
Mob guy?
I have to consider as the mob guy, it's another man's wife I'm sleeping with, so.
Yeah, and after all, you have such morals.
Mob guy.
Look, I have to run. But what I would like to see is that they begin to have misgivings about wanting
See, lunch isn't a lunch. Lunch is just a stop by for Martin Weir, who orders something nobody wants to eat, and then departs, and then the waitress brings this bullshit egg white omelet, very little olive oil, and strawberry frappes to the table, and they all are left to eat something they didn't even want. That's just such a perfect depiction of the movie star thing.
Hey, not bad. You're really getting it down.
It scares me how well I know this guy. I mean, I could do this tomorrow, no further preparation.
You know what this reminds me of? There's a episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jim Carrey. And, you know, I'm fully supportive of Jim Carrey's, like, exploration of himself and his awareness of the bullshit of Hollywood and his artistic and spiritual journey, which he's on and which he talks about in this episode with Jerry Seinfeld. If he's doing it knowingly as a homage to this scene, it's genius. But he does the exact same thing where they're at some diner, as they always are in Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and he asks the waitress for her name in that same kind of bullshit way where he doesn't really care about her name. It's like it's designed to show you that he's a caring and decent person who is aware of the fact that he's Jim Carrey, but really what he's more aware of is that you're aware that he's Jim Carrey, and that's just the Hollywoodness of it, which I think is hilarious. And one thing I've always been curious about at the end of this film, which is when Ray Bones goes to the airport and the kind of MacGuffin of this bag of money, and then it cuts to the movie they're making. Why is the movie purposefully badly acted?
Hey, Bones, look at me.
Fuck you, fuckball.
Damn!
Cut!
Penny Marshall is the director.
I am pushing the right button.
You're not pushing the right button.
I'm pushing the right button.
Every
take, I'm pushing the right button.
Where's that? Bam, man, show him how to do it.
All right. I don't know. Maybe it's
what do you want to do, Harry?
Get it fixed. I'm sorry.
Crap.
It's a wrap. Come back tomorrow.
Harry.
Fuck.
Harry, what are you doing? You should have gone into overtime to get that shot. This is only the second day. We're already 2 weeks behind. And do me a favor, all right, Harry?
Here's what I don't understand. Mark Norwood told me that he loves it.
Here's a nice little callback to Laverne and Shirley.
Okay. Why the hell not?
Because he's too short. Come on.
Because Martin's agent is played by... What's his name from Laverne and Shirley?
I don't know. Where do you want to go? Do you want to go to Morton's or
no? I never understood why the Keitel DeVito thing is portrayed as so poorly done. Is it just true to who these people are that they're not going to make like a, you know, Goodfellas? Well, fuck you, you fucking fuckball. And then DeVito just sort of looks silly as the Shylock. But that brings us to the end of the film. It's such an enjoyable ride. We won't mention the sequel because the less said about that, the better. You know, they tried to go back to the well and it just didn't work. But I love this movie so much. I love this kind of movie. If you know of other movies like this that you're not sure if I've heard, please send them to me. The music is so good all the way through. So that's where I leave you. I hope you enjoyed this episode about Get Shorty. I will be back next week with another episode of the full cast and crew podcast. Thank you as ever for listening and supporting what it is I'm trying to do. What is it I'm trying to do?